Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find several speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would like now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Corey.
Hi, I'm Corey, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Is this on, or this is just...
Thank Corey.
It's on? Okay, so you all can hear me. Good. So, let's see, I have a couple pictures. So, these are two graduations. One is college, one is grad school, so that speaks to the order, and hopefully you can tell which is the before picture from the picture. I don't ask me what I weighed. Like, if there's time for questions at the end, don't ask me what my top weight was, because I didn't get anywhere near scale. So that's just my disclaimer. There you go. So it's nice to be here. I want to thank Martha in absentia for asking me to come and speak. It's always so awkward because this thing is bigger than I am. For the listeners at home, there's a really big podium. I came here around 1988. I think it was August of 1988. I always say God has a great sense of humor, because I didn't, I wouldn't have come here had I come for me. And my first program, my sister was, it was suggested to my sister by outside help that she go to an Al-Anon meeting. And she asked me if I would go with her, and we were going to get some food afterwards. We were going to get some lunch. And I went with her, and I went for her, so I was able to listen. And if I hadn't gone for her, I think my mind would—I would have been clear that this won't help me, and I can, and these people aren't going to understand, and I'm not going to get them. And I went for her, and I listened, and I related, and I, because I didn't go for me, I didn't have time for my mind to shut, and I was listening, and there were some famous people there, and that helped, because I thought that was cool, and. And now I'm married to an actor, so it's like it's still cool, but it's differently cool. And I really related. And there was one woman in the meeting who talked about being angry with her father, and I didn't know feelings. I knew what I thought you felt, or you know, if I was angry, I asked you if you were mad at me. That was kind of my way. And so I came into that program that was Al-Anon, and then about 9 months later, a woman that I knew from school, I was in college at the time, a woman that I knew from school, I saw, just showed up at an Al-Anon meeting one day, and I lived in a town, oh, there's water, I lived in a town where there were two meetings a week, two OA meetings a week and two Al-Anon meetings a week, and I had never seen her in a meeting before, which is weird. It's like, in LA, that's doable, but... And so I ran into her, and I knew her from playing. We played racquetball together in school, and for some reason, I shared with her about my food. And I never talked to anybody about my food. I lived in the dorms for a year, and I'm also a type 1 diabetic. So I lived in the dorms for a year. My first year in the dorms, people thought that I didn't eat anything but a very rigid food plan, and I was binging like crazy, but people didn't know that. People just thought it was amazing, and one of my roommates she was in TOPS, which is a different program for weight loss, and she made cookies one day, and I helped her make cookies, and she was so impressed that I didn't lick my fingers when we were making cookies, and she didn't know when she left the room that I took a huge scoop of cookie dough and ate it, but because that was my deal. I did a lot of secret eating. I was diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic at the age of 9, and people started watching me and watching my food, and I thought, I learned, or I told myself out of my denial, and thank you for talking about the allergy also, that I, if you didn't see me eating, that it wouldn't affect me, and I don't know how I sort of measured that against my blood sugars, and you know, at the time I just didn't check, but I just thought, if you don't see me, then it doesn't matter. And so I did a lot of damage, and I'm really, really lucky today that I don't have more complications as a diabetic. That was 1975, to give you some sense of how long ago that was. So I came into this program, and this time I did come for me, but I already had a sense of 12-step program, so I knew what to expect. And I loved that other program, but when I came here, I knew that I was home. This was, I don't know that I was compulsively eating before I was diagnosed as a diabetic, but That's really when my binging took off, but food definitely was the language in my family. There's a story that I tell about my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, and she, I'm Jewish, so that tells you a lot about food in my home. And the story was she would speak the language of food. So she would say, "Are you hungry?" And for her, it felt like she was caretaking if she could feed us. So whoever the us were, "Are you hungry?" "No, I'm not hungry." "Okay. Do you want some apple?" "No, I'm not hungry really." "You want some Jello? You want some Jello? I've got some Jello." No. "You want a cookie?" "Okay, I'll have a cookie." And then because I was a diabetic, she gave me a cookie and she said, "Should you be eating that?" And it was that was kind of food in my family. So I've been here a long time. Today is the 29th of November 2014 and I came in 1988. That's a long time. And I've changed a lot in this program. I felt I have contempt prior to investigation, which if you don't know what that is, it's in the big book. And basically it's that we hate things that we don't know anything about simply because we think we have a right to hate them. And so I started reading the big book and I knew it was written in the 30s and it was about alcoholics and I didn't relate. And it took me a long time in this program to have the wisdom to be able to translate the symbols of jaywalking or alcohol or, you know, whatever the stories were. It took me a long time to get that wisdom. And now I go to a big book study every Sunday morning and I've gone through this book so many times in that big book study and with sponsors and in many ways. And I sit there and every time I read a chapter, I think, well, they added some new stuff to that chapter. I don't recall that being in there before. But there's some really great stuff in this book. And there's more stuff that I relate to than that I don't relate to. But I had to open up my mind and be able to think about the way that translates for me. So I was raised on AA literature just because there wasn't a lot of OA literature. There was the Brown Book, I think, when I came in, which was kind of, you know, sort of more of a Roseanne story. But so I was raised on the OA and, I mean, on the AA 12 and 12 and the AA Big Book. And a lot's changed for me in the time that I've been here. I came in, I was one of those people that, I didn't think I had amends to make to anybody but myself. And maybe there are those people. And no judgment if that's your story. My story was I didn't really think that I had hurt anybody else because I wasn't really capable of seeing my dark side. I wasn't capable of seeing how, like, if you made me angry, I felt like I had a right to be angry because what you did was wrong, right? And I didn't get that. It took me a lot of years in program and doing a couple of six and seven steps for me to be able to see that if I have a reaction, it has really nothing to do with you. I mean, it might. There might be something that's relational between us, but it's really about my reaction. And especially when I have a really huge reaction, my experience was well, I'll go back a little bit. So I've had a lot of family stuff in the last few years, and one of the big family things that's happened, of the many big things, is my grandfather died a couple years ago, and he had four kids, and the three surviving kids, and through the estate, all the nightmares that you ever hear about estates happened in my family. So families are segregated now, my family. So we had Thanksgiving on Thursday with half of the family, and Thanksgiving, and then a get-together on Friday with the other half of the family, and you know what, I have no idea where I was going with that story. I hate when that happens. I was talking about six and seven. Oh, well, anyway, so there's a lot of dysfunction in my family. And a lot of you probably know that the surviving member of my dad's family is, the non-surviving member is my dad who killed himself in 2010. And that was, you know, I'm really glad to have a program, to have had a program when that happened. So in 2010, and I've told this story before, and I've even told it at this meeting, so it's on tape somewhere, but I came home one day, and I got a call from my dad's neighbor, and through a series of phone calls found out that my dad had killed himself. He had killed his wife and killed himself, and I... And you'll see how ingrained this program is, because my first thought was, oh my God, how am I going to survive this? And who do I need to call? And how am I going to call my siblings? And my second thought was, I'm going to do this one day at a time. And I got that here. And and that's what we have to do, you know, one day at a time. So I was telling you how much I hated the Big Book when I came in. I'm sort of all over the place. I'm feeling a little bit scattered tonight. I'm not sure. So this is my Big Book. This is when the Big Book changed editions in the last couple of years. I was really sad because my old Big Book, which was kind of falling apart, had all these sayings in it that I had gotten here. And I was listening tonight to the Candle Takers, and I heard, apply the principles with the language of your heart. And I have, every time I hear something like that, I write it in my Big Book. So I have all this really cool stuff in my Big Book. So I'm given abstinence. I don't have to find a way to get it. I just have to find a way to keep it, right? So anyway, so I had this big tragedy in my family, and the second thing was an OA platitude. So I think that's, you know, that's, I got that here. I'll tell you a little bit about my eating. I was a hardcore binger. I was such a hardcore binger that I don't even know what my blood sugars were when I was growing up. I'm sure that they were extraordinarily high. The doctor that took care of me when I was a kid took all of his notes in shorthand. And then I wasn't able to get the records when I left, and he hadn't transcribed his notes in years. So I have no idea what my blood sugars were, but they were super high. I was a hardcore binger. I was what they now have a term for what I was, which is called diabulimia, which is people who are diabetics who regulate or don't take insulin in order to regulate their weight. So anybody in here who's a bulimic, you know that paradigm of I need to eat it. I can't not eat it. I have to get rid of it. I can't. So that was my experience, and I used insulin to do that, which is just brutal. And I had a friend, when I moved back to Los Angeles after college, I met a friend here who was a little bit younger than me, who was almost blind. She did the same thing, and diabetes is the leading cause of blindness, so for anybody who didn't know. And she was almost blind, and that's, I don't know how I didn't wind up having those complications from the hardcore eating that I did. So when I came here, I was raised in a family with eating disorders. I wasn't raised with alcoholism, but I was raised with workaholism. I was raised with rage. I was raised with compulsive overeating. I was raised with really doing anything to not have to feel our feelings. And it took me a long time. When I was new in program, I would see people come in, and they would talk about, you know, at 30 days, they would have all these feelings, and I felt so jealous of that, because it took me a lot of years to find my feelings here. It took me, maybe it was 10 years in before I think I cried at a meeting. I picked up the food at 9, probably, when I was diagnosed as a diabetic, and before that, there were so many other things that I was doing to hide my feelings. I don't even know what they all were, but my intellect and, you know, all these things that we do, you know, before we have the access to substances. And I was raised in a family where there was a lot of dieting. So I got here, and I didn't... So I was in this little town. There were two meetings a week. There was not a lot of abstinence. And people talked about abstinence. They talked about wanting abstinence. But I didn't. It wasn't like when I got to Los Angeles, and I got lots of different examples of what people's abstinence can look like. At the time, the tool was abstinence. Now it's called food plan. It's sort of we shifted language, but so I didn't know what to eat. My sponsor up in Humboldt County, where I got into the program, she didn't tell me what to eat. She said, find something that you feel comfortable with, and I thought that had to be perfection. I thought that. It had to be something that, I don't know. I thought it had to be something that I would be feel okay with you watching me eat. The problem is I didn't feel good enough in any way possible. So to think that I could come up with something that would be healthy for me, that I would feel comfortable doing in a crowd, was a bit of a setup for me. But I didn't know that. So I thought it had to be perfect. And I remember I went out to breakfast one time with some program people after the Saturday morning meeting, and they ordered things. They ordered pancakes and, you know, whatever, things that I didn't think, because I was raised with my mother on Weight Watchers, so, which was really boring food, and now kind of the way that I eat, ironically, but not because it's, because I'm just, you know, because someone said, here, eat this food plan. It's sort of just the way I want to eat these days. And I learned some really balanced things about eating from my mom, but I came up with a perception of what I thought a food plan needed to be, and it was impossible to keep. I know that there are people that can have food plans that are so structured, and that is absolutely their path or your path. And I love about this program, and so is also hard for me, is that everybody has their own way. And so we all work the same steps, we all have the same stuff, and everybody, you know, people have different ways of working their food plan, and I love that. So so when I was early on and I thought I had to be perfect, and I called my sponsor one day and I said, I have to start over, and she said, so what happened that leads you to believe that you have to start over? And I told her what I had eaten, and she said, whoa, that sounds like a really reasonable meal to me. And she said, you might, you know, perhaps the sponsor direction at this time is to maybe think about and do some writing about food and what you were taught about food. Because I was taught that food, my mother was a bulimic, she was an anorexic at times, she had her own deal, and I was taught to feel okay about food the way my mother was taught to feel okay about food. So for my mom, she couldn't be thin enough. And so, and I was heavy, and I just thought, I have to be perfect. So anyway, so that's what I learned. And it took me a long time to come up with a food plan. And so this is just my experience. But what I've sort of learned is, when I work my program, food isn't really an issue for me. There's not a lot of things that I don't eat. Just my experience. But what I know is, when I work my program. So on Thanksgiving Day, I emailed my food in that morning to my food sponsor, and what I said is, I'm going to have one plate of food, and I'm somebody that can do desserts, and I'm going to have a piece of dessert, which I didn't even wind up having because it was something that didn't even appeal to me, and I had a bite of my nephew's gluten-free something, and I didn't want any more. Like, it didn't speak to me. So that is a miracle. That is without this program, without all of you, without my higher power, without committing to my food sponsor what I was going to eat, maybe I would have eaten more than one plate. One of the things that's a big setup for me is getting too full. For some reason, so this is where my wiring is a little bit crossed. When I'm too full, I feel like I need to eat more. And so the good news is, they say self-knowledge avails us nothing. I don't know that I necessarily believe that. So here's my interpretation of that. I think when I was, before I got into program and I had all this information about nutrition, I think that's where self-knowledge availed me nothing. Now, having a sense of how to be proactive for me with my food plan and calling it in and knowing that I can make an outreach call and sometimes talking to my wife about it because we're there together at a family event. Knowing that that's going to be something that's going to help me have a sane food plan or sane meal, that's sort of self-knowledge in a way, and that helps me. So that avails me a lot. So that's my distinction about that. Let's see. So, 10 minutes. Yikes. All right. So I'll tell you a little bit about my relationship with God. So I was raised Jewish. We were not practicing kind of a God thing at home. I think there are people in my family that probably believe in God. In my extended family, I have an uncle who's a rabbi, so clearly one would think that. In my particular family, we were of the intellectualized variety that felt far superior to anybody who believed in God. And I didn't believe in God, and I could convince you why you shouldn't either. That was who I was. So when I got here, it's interesting because early on, either in that first program and then when I got here, it took me a long time to really even hear that we were reading about God. Maybe I was too busy thinking about myself or thinking about food or feeling, you know, the effects of what I had eaten or whatever. Or I didn't hear the word God. And then, so once I started working with a sponsor and she suggested turning things over to a higher power, that seemed weird to me. And So in the second step, it says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So that step for me has two really key concepts. The came to believe is brilliant because I forget where it is in the big book, but there's a place where they talk about the initial program where there are six steps. And a lot of what they took out was the process in the first, when they only had six steps. And now we have, like, it's okay to have that be a process, to come to believe that power greater than myself would restore me to sanity. And then it also introduces the idea of God. And so when I read that, I felt some comfort because I thought, it's okay maybe now if I don't believe in God, but if I just am open to the possibility that maybe someday that will happen for me. And by the way, I use the word God, but that's sort of shorthand for me. That's like, some days it's God, some days it's Goddess, some days it's Mother Earth, Father Sky, some days it's, you know, I don't know. It's my old cat who passed away, whose little spirit was so godlike. You know, it's lots of different things. So I say the word God, but it's really a lot of different things. So I wasn't raised believing in God. And so for me, I was in step two in the AA 12 and 12, it talks about how for people who didn't have a sense of God, it's almost easier than for people who did, and they kind of have to rework their sense of God. And my experience was, I adamantly did not have a relationship with God, and I had to kind of get rid of all that old garbage and sort of redefine that it was okay to find. I think what I learned here, maybe my big lesson, is to find what feels good for me. So that's in how I eat, that's in, you know, what I found was that, I don't know that I necessarily believed in God in the beginning, but when I got down on my knees and said, I feel like I want to eat, and I know that's not going to be great, so I'm going to just, whoever you are, I'm just going to get down on my knees and say, I don't want to eat, that my cravings lifted. So that's what I knew in the beginning. That was the beginning of that was like maybe my first spiritual experience. And now it's in everything that I do, and probably everywhere that I am during the day, there are markers that you can see that I live a spiritual life, because there's little sayings up at my desk at work, or at home we have stuff all over the place. That there's like three big books we have in three different rooms at home. And we don't have that many rooms, but we have three big books in three different rooms. And I have one in my car and one in my office. And that sort of stuff is everywhere. And which is a miracle for a Jewish girl like me who was never, ever going to believe in God. There were a lot of rituals growing up that when I first got into program and I started sort of working this, like in the beginning I sort of worked this as my religion, and then I realized the difference. I remember the first Passover that I spent with my family, where when we were reading some of the stuff that we were reading, I started to see how it was sort of what we read here. And I thought, you know what, these spiritual principles are probably really similar across all things. And I started to see the beauty in my religion of origin, and that was like another spiritual experience. I didn't have the burning bush variety of spiritual experience. I had that sort of stuff. Like, wow, this is beautiful. And these melodies that I grew up with, all of a sudden I was finding, this must be God, because this is when I feel it here and there's a warmth, maybe that's my higher power, you know. So So I want to leave time for questions. I just want to say that I've worked the steps a few times. I need to work them again. I've not done all of my amends. I still have financial amends left to do, and I know that from the amends that I've done that there's going to be a huge amount of freedom once I get them all off my list. And I'm finally in a position, having lost some family and getting a bit of inheritance, that I can take care of those things, and I'm really excited about that. There is nothing about this program that I'm not excited to do, because I know that it works and it helps and it makes things different. And when I was new, I wanted somebody to tell me, I wanted somebody to promise me that it would make things better. And someone said to me, I can't promise you that it'll make things better, but I promise you that it'll make things different. And that was enough for me. I thought, well, different's got to be better than what it is now. And so, I have, I lost my father to suicide. He took my stepmother with him when he went. I don't have a relationship with my mother. There's a lot in my life that still, you know, there are still days where I wake up feeling broken and wounded. Like that hasn't completely left me, but it doesn't last as long. And I get when I wake up and I feel broken and wounded that's a part of where I come from. And it's no longer, it's not today. You know, it's like, wow, there it is again. All right, honey, we're, you know, there it is. And it comes up to show us the path, and it comes up for healing. And that's a beautiful thing. For me, I think that's, you know, maybe one of the biggest lessons. Although I think I've said that a couple times tonight. Here's the biggest lesson. But maybe one of the biggest things is I get that what I'm feeling isn't necessarily real. Or it's not real today, that it's maybe history, but it doesn't mean that it's not a real feeling. It just means that it's not happening today. When I feel like the world is against me, it doesn't mean the world's against me. It just means that there's something old just coming up to come through, and I just have to stay present enough to feel it, you know. So I think I'm going to stop there and see if you have any questions. So, and someone will tell me when the question time is over, right?
Yes.
Okay, I can't see your signs because I'm 4'10", so hold them high. Perfect. Yeah. So the question is, I didn't believe in God when I came in, but did I ever feel pressure to believe in God? So yes and no. I never received pressure, but I felt it. So when my first sponsor, we went to the beach one day and read about steps 1 through 3, and we went back to her house afterwards, and I said, well, so what do I do now? And she said, well, you know, do you believe that you're powerless over food? Do you believe that, you know, that the power, higher power can help you? And are you ready to make a decision? And I was not. I was like, no way, lady. And I said, yes, I feel it. Because I was one of those people that thought, if I don't believe what you believe, I'm going to get thrown away. So there wasn't any external pressure, but internally I felt like I needed to be like all of you and I need to say what you all say. So I sounded pretty wise in the beginning, but, you know, I was just parroting back what you said, which maybe is still true, I don't know. But the question was, how am I working my program around the inheritance stuff? Well, it's interesting. So there's a couple ways to answer that, but I'm going to answer it from, you know, I don't make a ton of money in the work that I do, so I all of a sudden got some money that helped me be able to do some things in my life, like make a new kitchen. I mean, we redid our kitchen and our bathrooms. And I have to tell you, when I have extra money in my bank account, I feel like I should get better food. I feel like I want to take us out to dinner at the most expensive place possible. For some reason in my brain, money and food are very linked. And I have gone to other programs for the money piece of it, but I know so it's been hard. So through God, I mean, I just, you know, and one day at a time, I've done it all. I would not be a good, like, I keep on saying, God, I'm willing to try winning the lottery. Give me a shot, you know. But I think if that happened, I think I'd be really, I'd have to quit my job and go to a meeting every day. So, so God, if I'm going to win, make it big. Thank you.